You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's part two of our weekly discussion where we field your questions. Questions at drhoffman.net is the destination for questions. I'm with Layla Mutin because, naturally enough, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. So she's an integral partner. So, Layla, before we get to questions, you mentioned there was a question about iodized salt. I want to give people an update on our Save Our Supplements campaign, our SOS campaign. So it's a little, trying to read what's happening in Washington on this issue is a little bit like reading a fever chart. We were in imminent danger of the passage of something called the MPL bill, which actually a rider to a necessary appropriation for continuing funding for the FDAs. You've got to fund the FDA. I mean, it would be a catastrophe if they didn't fund the FDA. So it's mandatory. But what they do is they say, well, let's hook on some other legislation, maybe a little more controversial than, you know, something that is going to be bipartisan. Like, I think both parties are, you know, I don't think it's like a Republican saying, don't fund the FDA. And the Democrats are saying, fund the, it's like pretty much a given they're going to fund the FDA.
But yes.
They wanted to hook on legislation that was going to require mandatory product listing, which is onerous for the supplement companies, but also and burdensome and may, you know, really, because the margin on supplement sales isn't that great, may cause some small companies to go under or to sell to big pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
But also maybe a prelude to more supplement regulation, because it's kind of like, you know, saying, okay, all you aliens, just register the local police station. We're not going to round you up yet, but just, we want you to register. And it's like, no. We don't want to go down that path.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an analogy for mandatory product listing. Well, it looks like mandatory product listing was on again, off again, on and on again, off again. And in its latest iteration, we're getting towards the end of the month. There has to be an appropriation by the end of the month. If not, FDA is going to have to furlough or fire employees. Then it's going to be, you know, really chaotic and catastrophic. So they'll pass it. And they managed to, and I think due in large part to the outcry, because we told people to go to drhoffman.com/ANH. And at the Alliance for Natural Health, that's what ANH stands for, ANH-USA.org, they have conducted a pretty successful campaign to alert legislators that this is not innocuous, that this actually has implications, and that, you know, if you want to lose, you know, certain percentage of your supporters, who are avid supplement takers, just put on, go on record that you're for mandatory product listing.
I think
some legislators backed off, not, you know, fanatics like Dick Durbin from Illinois, who, you know, is perennial guy. He's to always be reelected because, I mean, he's one of these guys who is
when
like
term limits,
you know, 18th term, you know,
ridiculous
person, but well, he's a senator, so it's less terms, but, it looks like MPL will not pass on September 30th, but the forces who are in favor of MPL are going to regroup, and they're going to want to pass separate legislation that, which is probably the right way to do it, because it should be standalone legislation, not hooked on to something else, piggybacked onto something which has got to pass.
Yeah.
That's a sneaky way of getting it through. So we have to remain vigilant, and if you go to drhoffman.com/ANH, you'll find out more about it. And you can take action. You can, if you haven't already, or you want to do it again, you can alert your Congress person to make them aware of your displeasure with that particular initiative.
Yes, because we must save our supplements.
Yes.
They are an integral part of our well-being.
Indeed.
Your diet and your lifestyle.
Yeah, it's sort of like Charlton Heston once said about guns. It's like, from my cold, dead hand,
that's right,
will you pry my supplement bottle?
That's right. We have an email all the way from Beersheba, Israel.
Wow, cool.
From Irwin.
All right.
What's the lowdown on iodized salt? Do we really need it? See, I prefer kosher salt myself, which is not iodized.
There's something about the quality of kosher salt
yes.
for food.
Yes. It sprinkles better. It catches on better. It lays better. Chefs even prefer kosher salt as the only salt.
And there's no
really
there's
no
anything else in there.
It's salt.
Because when you look at a container of salt, unless it's a good form of sea salt, Himalayan, anything else, you'll see
anti-caking agents,
aluminum oxalate. And how do they get dextrose into salt? Why are we consuming this stuff? But iodine is a thing.
Yeah.
You get iodine from seafood, anything coming out of the sea, including seaweed, your seaweed salad when you're at Japanese
right.
or anything like
but
that.
But not from freshwater.
No, not from freshwater.
That's why people in the Great Lakes region had a lot of goiters.
Yes.
And hypothyroidism because they got their fish, the little fish they ate from the Great Lakes where there's no salt in the water, which it contains iodine.
Now, there's small amounts of iodine in other foods like onion, maybe in dairy, but dairy usually because of the cleaning solution that they use contain a little bit of iodine.
Yes.
So that's where you would get
when
that
they
from.
They cleanse the udders of the cows sometimes to prevent infection,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get a little bit. So the thing about a lot of salts that are like really great looking and tasting salts is they don't have any iodine.
Right.
Like Himalayan salt, it's beautiful. So aesthetic looking. It's
I'm imagining sea salt will contain some natural iodine in it or naturally occurring.
Sea salt doesn't contain that much iodine.
It doesn't.
You kind of want to fortify.
You do want to fortify. I actually use both. I'll use kosher salt. If I find that I've not used the regular old iodized salt in a while, I'll use some.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also a frequenter. At least once every 2 weeks, I like to get some sashimi. And there's always seaweed in my salad and all of that.
Seaweed
in my salad.
Put some nori on
Japanese
your salad or something like that.
Something like that.
I mean, for some people, seaweed is a bridge too far. It seems icky. It seems like, you go to the beach and it's the stuff that gets caught in your toes,
Right.
But seaweed is really delicious and nutritious.
It's,
and, I used to eat a ton of it when I was macrobiotic, because it was like a side dish. Hijiki and nori and, all these things.
Same supply of iodine.
Right.
Yeah.
But you'll get some, though. And it's interesting. Kids really like nori sheets. So for like a little snack for kids.
Yes.
You give them it's kind of like, it's crispy,
crunch,
got crunch.
A little salt.
And it's salty. And
yeah.
You just give them a nori sheet and they go to town. So that's a way to
get a little iodine.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yep.
Besides using iodized salt. So there you have it, Irwin.
I mean, some people believe, like Guy Abraham, that, we're all suffering from major iodine deficiencies. We pushed back a little bit on that assertion with Dr. Alan Gaby, who believes that that's overdone, and that Dr. David Brownstein is also a big fan of high-dose iodine.
Yes.
And there's a lot of controversy about how much iodine to take. I think iodine can be helpful for breast problems, fibrocystic breast problems,
it's
breast cancer immunity. Prevention. It's certainly, I think having adequate iodine is important for immunity.
But it's not indicated in Hashimoto's, taking excess iodine.
Right, it will suppress the thyroid. It could suppress the thyroid. Yeah.
Right. Okay. We've got, this is a very interesting question I wrote about in the newsletter. From Jill, I think we're all aware that excess sodium, speaking of salt, excess sodium intake can cause water retention, right? However, I guess I wasn't fully aware of the relationship between a high salt diet and fructose production. The hypothesis that a high salt diet may induce obesity by generating endogenous fructose. Can you discuss, did I hear this all wrong? Jill, you kind of did, but we're going to explain. Do I need to put down the salt shaker I know you've discussed salt intake in the past, and I know there's a balance, but particularly, is salt itself helping us gain weight? Now, we've all had a little bit of water retention. Maybe you sprinkled a little too much salt on your food, or you had something quite salty, or you've indulged in Chinese food, and you wonder why you're a little puffy the next day, or your shoes are maybe a little tight, or something, or your rings are a little tight. That's really what we're talking about. But a high salt diet doesn't generate endogenous fructose. What happens is a situation or a condition, or in the context of insulin resistance in metabolic syndrome, it causes us to retain more sodium, therefore pulling on more water weight. We're actually holding more water. This is the way. It doesn't in by itself cause obesity. You could take enough salt that you will eventually cause diarrhea.
Right.
You know, it's going to run through you. Going to draw a lot of water to your colon. It's going to run through you. So there is, you can't take that much salt in without consequence. But water retention in and of itself.
If you have good kidneys.
Exactly. If you have good kidneys. And that was going to be the caveat.
Right.
If you don't have good kidneys, you could be packing on a lot of water.
Yeah.
And that is part of your overall weight.
So what about the relationship with fructose? Because as you spoke, I Googled this. Mm-hmm. I just, did a little search on the search term, salt increases fructose. And what they say is that, well, for one thing, I mean, if you eat a lot of salty food, you may crave some sweet food.
Absolutely.
And you may want to eat more fruit.
Yes.
Or sugary beverages that are sweet.
To kind of cleanse your palate.
Right.
Even a little bit.
That's one simple mechanistic way where fructose might be increased. And fructose, there's also some suggestion that fructose plays a role in not only fatty liver, but even in hypertension.
Absolutely. And the fructose with the fatty liver, absolutely, because of fructose metabolism, doesn't demand any insulin. So fructose on its own can wreak this much kind of havoc, right?
Right.
And it can cause the hypertension because it's causing your body to retain more of the sodium itself. So, and fatty liver is a condition where often you will...
But this is interesting, you know. What does this person say? Go back to the original question.
Go back to that, the hypothesis that a high salt diet may induce obesity by generating endogenous
fructose. Time. I'm reading this article. It's very, wonky in Hypertension, which is the journal that's related to high blood pressure study and kidney metabolism and general metabolism. And there's a section in here which says that indeed, salt increases endogenous fructose production.
Now I've read that article and I think they really go down a rabbit hole with this one.
Okay.
Because they're really getting into the biochemistry of a kidney.
Okay.
To some degree.
Yeah.
And its ability to excrete or not to excrete. It really goes down the rabbit hole that way. And I believe to some degree they've overcomplicated an issue.
Yeah.
If there is fructose production, it can't be to any great extent. It's more what you take in.
Yeah.
More than anything.
But this, what you said before is interesting because fructose-induced insulin resistance.
Yes.
And subsequent sodium retention.
Yes.
Which is that it's not the sodium that makes the fructose.
Right. The fructose-induced the insulin resistance, meaning you took in a lot of sugar, so you became insulin resistant. So now that's causing you to retain the sodium. Right. That's causing the high blood pressure.
Okay. So this
is a hemodynamic thing.
This paradox, which they say everybody over the age of 40 should be restricting their salt to less than a half a gram of salt per day. Now, that's not true.
No.
Because overall, that is not the case.
Yeah.
However, so for example, I'm pushing 70. I'll be 70 next month. And I'm very active and I sweat like crazy when I work out. I'm losing a lot of sodium. And I salt my food, and I take in I eat pickles.
A little bit of the brine when you need it, too.
Right, which actually helps with cramps.
Yes.
However, there's the majority of people who are 70, seven-year-old males, and to a large extent females, are insulin resistant.
Sure.
And so with them, they may retain sodium more.
Yes.
Thus driving up their blood pressure.
Yes.
So it's different strokes for different folks when it comes to sodium intake?
Oftentimes we see high blood pressure and all that's being addressed is a high blood pressure. But then we look at their hemoglobin A1C, which is a marker of their blood sugar, and it's something like 5.8, 5.9. When we start to lower the blood sugar, voila, the hypertension starts to go away.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you don't have all this insulin being the master and commander, causing your body to retain more sodium, therefore more water, increasing your blood volume and the high blood pressure. That's right. How it's all kind of working. Salt is really the middleman.
Yeah. It's not the culprit.
The fructose
causing
the insulin resistance is what we're talking
okay.
about. It's not that your body is generating fructose.
Okay.
And this is in my article in the newsletter.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you write that?
So I wrote that a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Not a couple of weeks
ago. So let's highlight that article and we're going to explain how people can find it.
Go to drhoffman.com. And click on read. It's your pull-down menu, and you will see the past newsletter.
So go back a couple of...
Go back a few weeks.
So it's worth scrolling down if you're not already a subscriber to the newsletter.
Yeah.
Where you get in your inbox.
Titled, Joel's title, is Salt Making Me Fat? Salt Causing Me to Gain Weight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is like...
Answering you her
just
question.
Reviewed this question.
Yeah, because I thought it was such a great question.
Yeah. No, I think your answer is really spot on. So great. Yeah. I think we addressed this subject adequately. Next question, please.
We have from Janice. I recently had a chest CT scan. You know, I shiver every time I hear a CT scan. All right. The report mentioned that my thyroid glands are atrophic. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Okay. Trophic atrophy means that it's shrunken down and they're small and they may be inactive, but...
I'm 68 years old. I've been taking Armour Thyroid for 20 years.
Okay, well, the part of it here, I'll tell you, this is what happens. If you take exogenous outside thyroid, it gives a signal to your pituitary via something called TSH to stop your thyroid from producing its own endogenous thyroid. So what'll happen is you can shrink the thyroid literally by taking outside thyroid. Now, this actually is something that is used in some of our patients who have had thyroid cancer. They have the thyroid removed or part of the thyroid that is dangerous, but usually it's a complete thyroidectomy. And then they go on high-dose thyroid medication. And what that's designed to do is designed to suppress any thyroid cells that may have gotten away and keep them from proliferating, which could be a return return of cancer. So they actually use that to suppress cancer recurrence. Now, in this case, the suggestion is really mostly when you do thyroid supplementation, you want Goldilocks thyroid supplementation.
Yes.
You don't want so much that you completely turn off your body's own production of thyroid hormone. Now, how can you tell? Because the thyroid hormone that you take gives you some T4 and maybe some T3, and you're going to see those levels be identical in someone who's not taking thyroid medication versus someone who's taking. But you look at the TSH, and if the TSH is very low, it means your thyroid is not producing any thyroid because it doesn't need to, and it also means that it could be shrinking.
Okay. I thought if the TSH was very low, it's because your T4 and T3 were too high.
Well, you...
Because thyroid stimulating.
It means maybe you're taking too much outside thyroid.
Yes. Okay. All right.
I mean, it's either... Okay. If you're in hyperthyroidism, your TSH is low because your own thyroid is overproducing. In hypothyroidism, your TSH can be low because you're taking too much outside thyroid.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, you know, I mean, is it consequential for this person? This person has been taking outside thyroid. Hopefully they're doing well. And it just means that the thyroid doesn't need to do anything. It just gave up the ghost and it's shrinking.
Okay.
Interesting. I've never heard that, but you were saying yuck about CT scans. You know, CT scans.
Everything's a CT scan.
Yeah, everything is a CT scan. You know,
that's a lot of radiation.
It is a lot. Because what a CT scan is, it's about, it's on a magnitude of double digits more than an x-ray. What it is it's a computerized summation of a lot of x-rays. taken simultaneously, and the computer generates multiple images which can be read in three dimensions.
Yeah.
And so you need more radiation to achieve a lot of what are called slices.
Yes.
And then you are exposed to more radiation. So I don't like lots and lots of CT scans. Unfortunately, some people have conditions for which they have to monitor, like, you know, for the recurrence of cancer or something like that. They need more CT scans. But, you know, we try to minimize that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Janice, thank you for your question.
Okay.
Well, we've got one from Danny.
This will be the last one.
A Dr. Chris Calipe, an osteopathic physician, has been administering stem cell therapy for years. You've probably heard, I've listened to him on it.
Yep. On the radio. On New York radio. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And his website contains a lot of videos of patients who swear by the results. The doctor states there are thousands of high-level studies supporting stem cell treatment from bone marrow. I would love to hear your thoughts on stem cells.
My thought, I mean, I've actually written about this a couple of times over the years, and my thoughts on it are that there's great potential there, but at the current state, it is unclear if the benefits are real. And, you know, testimonials, unfortunately, are sort of the lowest order of scientific evidence.
True.
And you got to believe that there's a ton of stem cell research because we really want to get at regenerative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking a failing, whatever, brain, heart, liver, you know, and regenerate it and get it to take these pluripotent cells that have the potential to develop into mature organ cells and regenerate aging or damaged organs. And, you know, it'd be great if we could regenerate retinas. It'd be great if we could
rotator cuff.
Well, that is actually employed a lot. And I think the evidence
is so local, right?
I think the evidence is stronger that stem cells can be helpful there. But that's even controversial because it's so hard, you know, when you study joint function to separate placebo from reality. And, you know, when you get a procedure, it's like, oh yeah, my shoulder feels better. And besides, I just dropped $6,000, so I better feel better. I've got an incentive to feel better.
Exactly.
It's like we kind of joke, like the more you charge, the more the placebo effect, you know, so better charge a lot.
Yeah.
So I think that what they need to do is they need to come up with better delivery systems so it goes where you want it to go. Because like, let's say somebody's got Alzheimer's disease, so how do we know that something that's given to you in your arm is going to go to your brain?
Right. What if it differentiates and becomes a cancer somewhere?
Well, that's
where the big controversy is.
There is some controversy about, you know, what about these cells that are they can go a lot of directions. Do they necessarily go in constructive directions or could they proliferate in a harmful way?
Yeah.
I think there's a strong signal that this is, you know, creating weird cancers in some people. There's some studies that suggest that may have occurred in some cases.
Yeah.
One of the things that they just came up with is kind of interesting is it's a rejuvenative therapy. It's not stem cells. It's taking plasma from placentas.
Oh, yeah.
And giving it to aging people. Now,
being asked after you give birth, do you want to save the placenta for later? Oh, sure, yeah.
Well, it's not... I think you can take plasma from any old placenta.
Oh, I see.
Not even necessarily yours.
Okay.
But this
wasn't the case for like maybe childhood leukemia, happen that
well,
they have
you know
the placenta.
That's, actually for bone, that's sort of like cloning. It's like when you know, when your cocker spaniel dies, can you clone the, you know, replacement?
I want Dolly back. I miss Dolly.
I think that was his first sheep that was cloned, right?
Right. You know, so this is, I think they're working on it.
Yeah.
I think some doctors are on the bleeding edge of this, like Dr. Calipe.
Yeah.
And, you know, you pays your money and you takes your chances. Now, it's actually highly regulated now, and I think they're cracking down on some aggressive claims about stem cells. The FDA wants to suppress this because, well, it depends on who you listen to. Like, the FDA is a villain. They don't want to get behind innovative therapies. On the other hand, the FDA doesn't want people to succumb to therapies that aren't ready for prime time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that It'll come. They will develop ways of using stem cells for regenerative purposes. But man, they've been working on it for a long time. And they haven't come up with the real breakthroughs yet. I think one of our patients had some eye damage due to, he had a very severe infection. And he had some stem cells placed in the back of his eye. And I think he had good results.
Fantastic.
On the other hand,
wonderful.
On the other hand, there's some people who suffered blindness from stem cells that were administered in a haphazard way.
Oh, no.
You know, some bad stuff can happen if it's not done correctly.
You often hope for the paraplegic or quadriplegic who can walk again.
Yeah, regenerate the spinal cord.
Yeah
I mean, believe me, there's a great impetus for this.
Absolutely.
And if they haven't announced it and haven't come up with, this is ready for general use in prime time, then I would be a little skeptical about the so-called pioneers who are getting ahead of the companies that are investing billions of dollars in research that still haven't nailed it. Because there is an incentive to do this.
Sure.
So that's my take on it.
Okay.
I don't do it. I think at this point, if I had like a really bum shoulder or knee or something like that, I might try stem cells.
But would you try it first or after you've exhausted everything else?
Well, I would, as a last resort. But, you know, I actually had a knee problem and it was just a matter of simple surgery, arthroscopic surgery, which was a marvelous fix. And, I go running and I go, my knee's hurting, but it's the other knee. That's a good sign. I go, my knee's hurting, but as good as my other knee.
All right. Don't develop the same problem with that knee now. Okay.
No, I'm way scaling my mileage down.
Okay.
So more on the bike.
Up the glucose.
More on the bike, more in the pool, more in,
weight-bearing
exercise in the gym.
There you go.
Yeah, because the marathon days are over, so over, I think.
Okay.
And those long-distance running events are overrated, especially for people over a certain age.
Okay.
If you could do it, God bless you. I mean, but it's the rare person over the age of 65 who can run long distances without doing some irreparable damage to their body.
That's a lot of wear.
Spine, hips, feet, knees, ankles.
The long distance.
All right, that's all the time we have. So thanks very much for joining us.
And don't forget to send your questions to questions@drhoffman.net.
Or record an audio question at 877-726-8255. You have multiple ways to get through us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And thanks, Layla, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Until next week. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mutin, registered dietitian nutritionist. I maintain a private practice and see patients regularly. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone and telehealth consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.